Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello, in this episode of Scrappy ABM, you're actually going to hear where I was interviewed on somebody else's show. We just love the content so much. We wanted you to hear it and make sure that you got it. I hope you enjoy this episode of Scrappy ABM.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Digital Banter. Joining us today is Mason Cosby, founder slash CEO slash whatever else you want to throw into that title for Scrappy ABM. Two-time guest. Welcome back, Mason.
I'm surprised you let me back on, but this time, hopefully it's actually helpful.
Just to keep you level set, there's a three-time guest that you're still catching up to. So you got to catch up to Taz. We've had her on three times, so you got one more to catch up.
I don't think I'll ever beat Taz. She
just likes to talk, and that's why we bring her on.
The real reason is because people keep asking us silly questions about ABM, and what better way to pick your brain than bring you on here, and then I can just send them a video.
Can I out myself real quick?
Sure.
So James texted me and was like, hey, how do you think about ABM measurement? And I totally forgot and left him on read. And then about 2 weeks later, I got an invite to do a podcast interview on ABM measurement. So I think that's actually why we're here. You wanted to corner me to talk about it. Is that right?
It's very much it for sure. And I needed to do something. We did the whole, everybody knows your mantra about no tech stack and early walk, crawl, run. So we don't need to do that again.
Crawl, walk, run, but yeah, we're there.
Yeah. Run. Yeah, but that's what they do. They run first because they buy 6 cents in there.
Fall on their face and then get laid off. But that's the past episode. Let's talk about measurement.
Before we get into that, the one thing that we've started to do with this season is everybody talks about their life in B2B, things like that, but nobody ever grows up and says, oh, I want to be a B2B marketer. Like, you don't just come out of the womb and say, oh yeah, I want to go into B2B. I want to work with tech, SaaS, things like that. So what we want to know is, how the hell did you get into B2B? Like, we find all these backstories so interesting.
Yeah. So really long story short, as is the standard case, I thought I was going to be a pastor. So I was a volunteer youth pastor for 4 years. And then I worked during that time. I didn't make a ton of money, because when you volunteer, by its nature, they don't pay you. And I met this really cute girl. And I was like, well, I want to get married. So I asked the church if I could have money, and they were poor. So the answer was no. So inevitably, I realized, oh, that path isn't going to happen if I want to actually be able to provide for a family. So I had a friend that said, because I was working in B2B sales. So I was a full funnel account executive. It's like sourcing my own pipeline, closing my own deals, managing my own accounts. Hard job. Also straight commission as a side note. So just tough. Also selling print advertising. I really stacked the deck against my favor. So essentially I worked two volunteer jobs. That's what I'm trying to say. Anyway, long and short, I had a friend that was just like, man, Mason, you're actually pretty good at making money and helping people make money. And you could probably make a good living doing that. And for me, I side note, I earn a lot of money with the goal being that I actually give a lot of money. So I fund a lot of missionaries or my church or things along those lines. That's been my main mission personally, is to grow businesses. Because if you help other people grow significantly, and then you can take a small percentage, that percentage could still be a lot of money. So that's how I ended up landing in B2B, is focusing on the mission of now funding the church and funding missions, and just really got focused in on, well, how do I do marketing half decently? And I think it's gone pretty okay.
Have you done the LinkedIn posts of what almost becoming a pastor has helped me learn about B2B marketing?
No, because I got a degree in marketing with the intent of using that degree in marketing to help me as a pastor. So I actually did it the other way around, and it didn't work.
Okay. I will say this is one of those rare cases where we have three people in the same room that actually all have degrees in marketing. I feel like that is the rare, almost non-existent case for certainly most B2B marketers.
And you've got three people in the room that haven't used their marketing degree, probably.
You're absolutely right. I think every single thing that I learned, besides learning
the four P's,
every single thing he's learned from me. That's what I'll finish the sentence for him.
That's not true. I got this job because I had an internship doing PPC management for e-commerce companies.
Anyway, before we go into a completely different motion than what we're here for, let's talk about ABM. And I want to understand, Mason, like in that B2B world, what drew you then to focus on ABM as your passion point?
Great question. So after the job selling print advertising, the obvious logical next step is to become the marketing director and sole marketing hire at a rapidly growing fintech company, obviously. So that's what I did. And I didn't know what I was doing. So inevitably, I like somehow learned enough online and realized like, oh, I should hire an agency. So there was this agency that we hired that ran performance marketing and said, oh, you guys are like a perfect fit for ABM. And I was like, what's that? And then they explained it to me. And I was like, what is everybody else doing? Because it just made, coming from a sales background of saying, oh, I want my best fit customers, and I'm going to spend all my time, energy, and effort focused on those, just made like a lot of sense. We built an ABM program for that fintech company because it was a vertical specific organization that did lending software, which is a side note. If you know me, I love Dave Ramsey. So I didn't last super long at that lending software company. But after that, I was like, this ABM stuff is like really interesting and very neat. So I landed at an ABM agency, and then the story picks up from there. So I've been in the ABM, like doing ABMs dedicated for probably 5 years at this point. But that's how we landed, as I was at a fintech company, worked with an agency, and they're like, ABM is a good idea. And for them, that was like LinkedIn advertising. But then the more I dug into it, I was like, oh, this is like a whole world. And now I spend way too much time thinking about this world.
I didn't realize that ABM was a buzzword 5 years ago. I thought that was like, I think we're in like year two or three of that.
Oh no, man. This thing is like 10 years old.
Called ABM? What was the acronym before ABM? It was one for sure.
Key account. So like it was primarily owned by sales, and then marketing caught up and was like, oh, we should focus on good customers.
Naturally, sorry. They came up with an acronym and here we are.
Pretty much. Well, I'm Googling when it was, yeah, ABM is B2B was published in 2019, which is Sengren's book. That was, in my mind, one of the things that put ABM more mainstream. So it was done before that, but then he published the book.
I think people still think of it as LinkedIn ads, though, if we're just being devil's advocate for a second.
Yeah, I have a lot of work
to do. I don't know. Let's dive into the actual topic about measurement here a bit, because Mason, you're not wrong as far as me cornering you. What triggered this conversation? So like now, ABM as a buzzword has blown up. Say, for as an example, you could just do a LinkedIn post, use the three letters ABM, and it'll probably get more engagement than anything else. Now, literally in the last, I don't want to say it was this week, but it was like 2 weeks ago, three clients in a row asking me about benchmarks and measurement for ABM. I'll be honest, I had a little bit of a hard time with it. And then when we were talking to you, I think that you almost outlined the three separate examples that we had, because I guess where I was struggling is ABM is like completely custom to whatever brand you're working for. Everybody's strategy is different. And like you gave, I don't want to steal your thunder, but three categories of ABM: account expansion, growth, and what was the other one?
Acceleration.
Yeah. So it's, acceleration. All of those clients, it was like 1, 2, 3. Those were their three separate goals. And so I can't benchmark against any of this stuff. So what is your advice as far as, we'll do the crawl, walk, run. I'll get it there right it eventually for ABM measurement.
Yeah. So the first thing we want to outline is when we're building the program, we need to align playbooks or programs or campaigns, whatever terminology you want to call it, but we need to align what we're actually doing with where a buyer is in journey. And I say that because about 30% of the people that have tried to work with us in the past year, which is, we've had about 200 sales conversations in the past year and a half, 30% of them were currently running third-party intent as the trigger for the display advertising, with the goal being to book a demo. And if somebody doesn't know that you exist, to go from I don't know you exist to I'm now on a demo is like a really significant leap. It happens, but it's not common. So if we are benchmarking the goal of an ABM program being the first touch point should convert into a demo, of course your ABM program is failing. Like this is not gonna work. So the reason I start here is we then think through any ABM program in the context of what we refer to as an account progression model. Another framing would be the buyer's journey. We use account progression model as a couple of core stages. There's six. So awareness, initial engagement, meaningful engagement, MQA, SQA, opportunity. Our six core stages that we look at. And what we want to do is we want to understand what we're actually doing at those stages, with the goal being of how we drive a buyer to go from one stage to the next. And then we measure success at each stage. So that is how you actually start to focus on, okay, what is the measurement here? Because again, I actually have a target account list for us. And the way I'm approaching it is slightly different. I don't recommend this for everybody, because sometimes you need to get buy-in from your executives. And the fun fact about being a CEO is I'm bought in. So like executive buy-in is there. We've got a target account list of 2,000 accounts that the goal is to have a meeting with 75% of them in the next 5 years. Like, my timeline is like way longer, but if I can get a meeting with 75% of 2,000 accounts, that's 1,500 meetings in a 5-year time horizon. I feel pretty good about that. We are then measuring very differently because of the goal of the program at a high level, but then also the sub goals at every stage of their journey.
So a couple questions then. Let's start with the basics when we talk about like definitions, right? So an MQA and SQA, marketing qualified account, sales qualified account, would you say that those are the same or different than an MQL and an SQL?
Typically different. So when I think about MQA versus MQL, MQL is focused on the individual, whereas MQA is focused on the account. So typically, there's a bunch of different ways you can measure this. I'm going to take a step back from like tactical measurement for a moment and think about what is the purpose of every stage.
Yeah.
And then if you can identify the purpose, you can then identify how do we know that in the context of our current programs or tech stack. So awareness is what it sounds like. Do they know? And nobody likes that as a measurement criteria, but can guarantee people that know you exist are exponentially more likely to buy from you than people that don't know you exist. So important. That's step one. Step two of initial engagement, the goal here is, do we know they have a problem? Not that they're exploring viable solutions, not that they're even looking at ours, but do they have a problem? How do I measure that? It's typically significant content engagement with our content, because I spend about 70% of my time talking about problems. So if people are like resonating with the content that we talk about a lot, it means that they have a problem. They may not want to solve it, but like they at least acknowledge they have a problem that should be solved at some point. Meaningful engagement is then we know they're exploring viable solutions. There's a couple of different ways you can look for that. One of the ways that we've looked at that is like review websites. So if you're using G2 Intent, you can actually see, oh, they're like actively looking at different review websites. They are asking for a solution. MQA is then I know these accounts understand our solution uniquely. So I think about that as multiple right fit decision makers or buying committee. And I use the word buying committee more so than decision maker, because like the CMO or the CFO is typically the one that actually signs our contracts. But I spend most of my time talking to senior marketing manager, director, or sometimes VP, depending on the size of the organization. So they may not actually make the decision, but they are the person that is the internal communicator that is convincing the decision maker on our behalf. So when I think about it, do I see multiple influencers or people that would typically make a decision, at least looking at our website? At which point, if they haven't already booked a meeting, we then reach out to get the meeting booked using use case and case study content. And the primary goal of an SQA is like, that's the first call, is like, are they actually qualified? Not based on fit, because they should be qualified at least from a firmographic perspective, meaning like revenue, industry, headcount, that kind of stuff. You may do some ICP criteria qualification based on psychographics, which is a fancy way of saying, are they actually nice and like good to work with? I mean, that's at least in the services space. Like, we don't work with mean clients. I just, because truly, it's not worth me losing people that hate their job. So I don't work with mean clients. Crazy. Anyway, so that's SQA. And then opportunity is they are actually qualified. And you could also refer to this as a SAO, so sales accepted opportunity.
Yeah.
But I just think of it as opportunity. So those are the stages. And again, you then identify clear measurement at every single one of those stages.
What would be your recommendation? A lot of what you said is obvious, let's put it that way. And to your point, like, it's also a common sense thing of making that transition from, let's say, demand gen and MQL measurement to ABM and MQA measurement. If your MQLs are based off of ICP fit, things like that, like, in theory, your MQAs should automatically be that fit because you're moving in an ABM motion and you're defining who you're going after. No shit, they should be a fit otherwise. So I think, like, you would think. So what is your, do you have any suggestions on somebody making that jump from, let's say, demand gen measurement into ABM measurement, just at that like criterion level, and how to rethink or reprogram yourself and or the infrastructure to move from moving away from, let's say, like ICP as a primary component of an MQL versus other criteria on the MQA side?
Yeah, this is going to get a lot of hate. Sorry. But I think the easiest transition for many people, and as the starting point, is they're doing demand gen typically based on what they anticipate the ICP to look like versus named accounts. So just a simple transition of calling out, we want to engage these accounts, and then actually shifting your marketing programming from a promotional perspective to focus on those accounts. Even if you see MQLs, but if you have MQLs at target accounts that you intentionally went after, like, that is a step in the right direction. So you don't have to massively change all of your current measurement capabilities. And that's why that's going to get a lot of hate, because measurement is actually one of the top 5 reasons ABM programs fail. So when we actually look at it, I've seen many people actually go through the exercise of shifting their tech stack to focus on account measurement before building the program. And that process can take 3 to 6 months. It's super, super well. So it's hard. So what we've spent is a bunch of time building reporting for a program that doesn't exist yet. That's hard. And then you got to go back to the board or your executive team and be like, yeah, like we got the dashboards. There's nothing in them, but they're there. But that's the flip side, is we built the program, but we don't have accurate reporting on it yet. So we don't know what isn't working. So it's a chicken and egg situation. So like my recommendation is actually, this is where people are going to hate me, but I think you leave a lot of the reporting out of the gate the same. And the primary goal is, did we go after the people that we actually wanted to get? And do we at every stage have clear measurement criteria? Yes or no? And again, if it's the intentionality of, we said we were going to go get these accounts, 3 months later, they showed up on our product pages. When? That's it. 6 months later, are they like actually booking a meeting? When? Did we know every touch point along the way? No. But you now know what gaps to go and fill in the context of your current program. So again, that's the crawl stage. Now, if you want to walk and run, I got to be honest, like there is inevitably a point where like it does make sense to invest in the right technology, because the technology is what makes it easier to scale. But again, my primary message is, stop trying to scale things you don't even know if they work. Make it work first. Don't overinvest. Get it right. It will be busted and duct taped and it'll be hard, but then you can go and solve the hard parts knowing it works.
Yeah, that one's tough. And I feel like what we see people do all the time is, we move to an ABM motion, we want to track account-based user journeys. And like, once you do that, you're taking your demand gen reporting that you have. You just mentioned that your account list is 2,000. You're essentially doing that 2,000 times for 2,000 accounts. This is like almost like what they expect as far as the level of reporting in the program. Okay, so how did this one do? How did this one do? How did this one do? And I feel like they jump so far down that rabbit hole that they lose track of, okay, how is the entire program doing?
Yeah.
And like you said, that's a shit ton of work to do that level, give that level of insight.
And again, I want to be super clear. We're on a podcast episode. There's no client here to push back. So what I'm about to say, it sounds really easy, but just like, why do we need one-to-one reporting at the awareness stage? Because we can technically get there. It's just really hard. And is that the best use of resources? Because everybody has limited resources, always trying to get the best result. We can, like in theory, you could focus on large enough accounts to where you can do one-to-one programs at the awareness stage in LinkedIn and get 300 match contacts on that company and only run a program to that one company to 300 contacts and see their levels of engagement in each campaign group. Like in theory, we can do that. Is it worthwhile? Probably not. And that's okay. The other thing that I think through a lot is like one-to-many, one-to-few, one-to-one. If you look at our content, we actually don't talk a lot about that concept, because I don't actually think it's that important for a sharding program. What I want to focus on is ideally a one to few or one to many at the top that then becomes more one to one as they show increased levels of engagement. And we can then effectively personalize based on first party engagement. My primary goal is to convert third party contacts into first party contacts that we can then really personalize journeys for and experiences for, not at the awareness stage or the initial engagement stage, but more the meaningful engagement on stages. So again, you can way more easily get one-to-one level reporting and actually map out the journey once they've actually entered into your CRM and have a relationship. Before that, the goal is just, do they engage with our stuff? Yes or no. Do they have a problem? Yes or no.
Do you have any advice specifically for the awareness stage? Because I think that's where everybody struggles the most. Because we talked about this last time, about one of the common issues with ABM is you have these account dream lists that, frankly, like the brand probably hasn't ever heard of you, probably doesn't know you exist. And that step one is to get on their radar. Like, what are some like early indicators that you can look at to tell whether or not they're on your radar?
Yeah, I got to experience some serious humble pie at B2BMX this year, because we got the opportunity to speak. And I just asked the audience, and I was like, hey, who's here because of the title? And 90% of the room raised their hand. And then I was like, who was here because they like have followed along with Scrap ABM content? 2.5 people raised their hand. Like literally one guy was like, like, I was like, wow, awesome. So like, I thought at, like, cause I've spoken at B2B MX now 4 years running. Like I thought our brand was like known, and it's not. There are a lot of people that don't know that we exist. So when I think about it from that perspective, the advice is, for starters, look at the target account list and identify where they currently live and how you can show up in a way that is non-intrusive. I say the word non-intrusive. This is another thing that we've started to talk a lot more about, is direct and indirect channels. So direct channels would be like LinkedIn, DMs, email, phone call. I don't want to use direct channels unless I have something really good to say or there's an expectation, because that's an account way more quickly, typically speaking. Whereas in indirect channels, we can show up through paid media, through organic, through events, in a way that is not intrusive and is more inviting. So I think about that at the awareness stage. I would not typically recommend using direct channels at an awareness stage. You're going to have more difficult tracking because they're not direct channels, but the goal is to go from awareness to initial engagement. And ideally, make sure you like webinars for this purpose, because nobody likes gated content. But with a webinar, it's kind of gated content. Like, they have to give you their information. So really like webinars for this purpose. And then for me specifically, using LinkedIn a lot, we use LinkedIn events. And I actually, this is going to get really tactical for a moment, but I filter by industry and then state, like actually the state in which people live in. And then I invite people in that state and I go state by state. So I make sure I hit everybody versus just the industry criteria. So over the course of 3 months, I'll get everybody in my network that's in our target vertical. And because my awareness stage play is continuing to connect with people on LinkedIn that are our target accounts, they'll then get opted into our events if they register for our event. And then I actually have their data captured and they can move into meaningful engagement. So that's what I'm saying, is my awareness stage is connecting with people on LinkedIn. And like, that works for us. And I'm happy with that. My initial engagement is in an event that's a low barrier to entry event that's run through LinkedIn where they use the registration form. And then they're opted into our content and they start to get weekly content from us where we show up as familiar, and then we can follow up one-to-one based on their levels of engagement. Like, that's it.
So you mentioned gated content. Is there a time and a place in the cycle for that?
I, as a marketing agency, lean super far away personally from gated content, because our industry and agencies have done a really bad job with content, and we would like gate infographics, not hypothetically, like we gated an image, like how dumb. So I personally would rather just give the content away and be super helpful and be known as a generous brand. So that's my approach. Other industries, I've actually seen gated content work really well, specifically in some of the industrial clients that we work with, which was surprising to me, do really well with gated content. And I think it's because those are older industries, so they've not been abused as much. So people are more open to opting in for things like that. So I think it's industry dependent.
I think you're 100% right. I think the MarTech industry specifically has created the boom of don't gate your content, give it away. They're right to an extent, but when you are working with those older school engineering, manufacturing, which is a big majority of the industry, it's like one of those things where the MarTech brands have the loudest voices. So that's what everybody thinks now, even though some of the old stuff still does work. I would not gate a infographic, but no. Certainly a meaningful piece of content or a webinar or something like that, I think works well. And then on the ABM side, because I guess where we run into it and there's more of an issue is like, they're using it to track engagement on those accounts. So like you mentioned, as far as how do you track how do you track a meaningful engagement on content at the account level?
Good question. A couple of ways. So one, depending on how you've set up your HubSpot, you can aggregate actually all your contacts associated to an account level and actually see the number of contacts that are engaging with specific content assets.
But that requires them to be known within the system, correct?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So like meaningful engagement. So if we had the graphic pulled up for our account progression model married with our activation playbook concept, which is essentially the activation plays or the different tactics. There are two kinds of triggers that we operate off of. One is a list-based trigger, and then the other is signal-based triggers. So list-based triggers are like, you pulled this from Zoom Info and they don't know you exist. I spoke at a Full Funnel Summit this morning, and they actually sent me a list of 175 contacts. So list-based trigger, like you came to my session, awesome. But they've not opted into anything from me personally. And the further down the account progression model you go, meaningful engagement is actually the last stage where we even considered doing list-based triggers. And I actually personally, my team thinks a little bit differently and they've got other use cases, but I personally don't think you should do list-based triggers past the initial engagement stage. Because at the meaningful engagement stage, the goal is that we know that they have a problem they're actively trying to solve. So if you think about list-based triggers, that'd be G2 reviews as an example. So to your point, they need to be opted in at some point. Like, we need to be able to track them. Otherwise, it's really hard to trigger different programs based on their stage. And then the final thing is, if you think about the account progression model as their affinity towards your brand and their familiarity with your brand, like at a certain point, they should say, this brand has actually been helpful. I want more from this brand. It's just not the awareness stage, like later. So that's how I think through it.
Yeah. So you started to touch on kind of two questions that I wanted to reframe that James brought up. The first one was, and they go hand in hand basically, but like, how do you measure known versus unknown progression, which is what I was coming with from that HubSpot question. And then tag team with that is like, when you need to create a data point where they become known, right? Which is that gated content essentially, or becoming a hand raiser and reaching out in some respect, like where, if we say gated content for the purpose of this conversation, where does that ideally fit within that progression model and in that buyer journey?
Yeah. So I'm going to pull back and go back to, what is the purpose of every stage? So if the purpose of the awareness stage is that we can validate to know we exist, like, it is not hard to export your LinkedIn followers. That's a relatively easy thing to look through. So there's that. And if the goal of awareness is to identify that they know we exist, check. At the initial engagement stage, do they have a problem? That is content engagement. So that could be they opt in for a webinar. That could be they're signing up for our newsletter. That could be they're showing up on all of our social content. I'm walking through the things that I have done, or like at an event. Like, no one goes to a session at an event because they're like, oh, I've already completely figured this all out. Like, they go to a session at an event because they don't know what they're doing. And I say that lovingly, but that's why they're at the event or at the session. So we can validate they likely have a problem that they're trying to actively solve. I don't know that they're looking for solutions. They think this session might be the solution. Great. But those are list-based triggers that you can measure. And then you move to meaningful engagement, which is they are actively looking for a solution of some kind. And I'll give the example of, like, when people are looking for ABM, that might be a fractional, that might be an agency. That might be a big agency. That might be a software. That might be like any number of things. It might be a course. Like, but they're actively looking to figure out how to do ABM better. And we want to be a part of that consideration set. I'm sorry to give you a juke answer, but I really want people to look at their own current programs and say, oh, this is where this program fits. How are we measuring that? And then as far as it relates to gated content, it's probably, if you're going to run with some form of gated content, it's probably the initial engagement or the meaningful engagement stage to get that conversion. Because post that, it's MQA. And MQA is like straight up signal-based. Now, with certain tooling in place, like an RB2B or a Warmly or a Sixth Sense or whatever, where you can de-anonymize website traffic, you may not need anything to opt in to see that they're actively looking at your product pages. So that's where it gets into, tooling is helpful. Like, way easier to be a carpenter with like the right tools than no tools. It's hard to argue with that. It's just making sure that you have the actual skill set to use those tools well versus buying the tools thinking they'll give you the skills.
All right. So then let's talk about tools that are needed for the crawl stage of measurement.
CRM and marketing automation platform. That's it.
Like HubSpot.
Yeah. Like, I'm running an ABM program. I will give this caveat. We actually just moved to ActiveCampaign for our marketing automation. For any of you that have been in the really early stage, don't get me wrong, I love HubSpot. I have bled orange for quite some time. But that price hike from starter to pro is a lot. So ActiveCampaign, same functionality, but half the price. So it's hard to argue with that. But we've been running an ABM program and run an ABM program that now actually has automation capabilities focused on segmentation. So we did a lot manually because we didn't have a crazy huge audience. Our newsletter was like 4,000 people from an audience subscriber size. So like relatively easy to segment that audience based on firmographics. But as we're now growing, we need more automated functionality. So that's about it.
I'm going to push you on that. So is ActiveCampaign going to give you the insight into the unknown accounts or only the known contacts?
So in order to get unknown, you would need some form of data enrichment. And like, sure, if you would like to do that, but that's an additional cost. And I actually think that a lot of people can start a marketing program based on their existing CRM to validate that the model works. So that's why I actually only say, hey, you don't need this to get it started. Now, inevitably, you're like, shoot, I don't have enough data. great, let's go get a data enrichment platform that then gives you specific lists that are filtered by your firmographic criteria. So you can then drive that engagement to that specific list. But like, honestly, sales now is like $1,000 a year. And if you really need something to get started, you can build a lot of great lists using SalesNav.
All right. So then what tools are in the walk stage? Because I think where James and I run into this is we have clients that think they're in the run stage, number one. They might be in the walk stage, but in reality, they're probably in the crawl stage.
Yeah. Walk stage is then focused on identifying tools that fill in gaps. And I think about moving from automated or from manual to automated. So I'd actually say we probably just for ourselves are like toddling into walk stage for our own ABM program, which is why we went from a lot of manual processes to now setting up automated segmentation and then creating individual content journeys based on segmented audiences at a persona and industry level. But I didn't start there. I just made content that I thought would be helpful for my target accounts. So I would look at the current process and say, where do we spend a lot of time, energy, and effort that works? And how can we automate that without losing a human touch? And I'm intentional on that framing because some people will hear automated and think, oh, I should automate my outbound sequences. And no, you still need a human touch to do some form of manual research. But audience segmentation to give the right list based on levels of engagement, that is not like you can automate that and get the same result, if not better results, than a manual segmentation.
All right. I know the answer to this between all three of us, but I want to get this as a snippet that we can send to anybody. As the consultant, the agency, the strategist that is outside of the organization, whatever you want to call us, level of access do we need to the tech stack to do our jobs effectively?
Is in my contracts and I get redlined on it and I push back every time. I'm a system administrator in HubSpot or Salesforce in order to actually do the job. Now, if you don't want that's fine. That just means we're hopping on a call and I'm walking you through what buttons to click and it's a waste of time for everybody.
Thank you. Captured.
Gotta love those calls, the walking through buttons to click. It's always so stressful too because, oh God, I feel like those are the most stressful calls.
Half the job is I know what I want to get to, but sometimes I got to click around for a second. Like I got to play with the filters. And if I don't nail it, the filters the first time, the client thinks I'm an idiot. Where no, I've just never had unfettered access to your tech stack. So I don't know what properties are actually being used right now. So we got to figure it out a little bit. Anyway, it's a whole
exactly
thing.
Because there's so many different stakeholders that are involved in ABM and forget even just like marketing versus sale versus customer success or MOPS, anything. Let's just look at it from the perspective of reporting up. What are your suggestions and recommendations to somebody that's in that position that needs to showcase to the board, to the CMO, the success or failure or learnings of an ABM program? Like, how should they go about thinking that?
Three dashboards. So dashboard one is a marketing only dashboard that's focused on account progression and actually seeing the levels of engagement to the best of our abilities. Dashboard two is the shared dashboard between marketing and sales that shows accounts that are showing significant levels of engagement that are ready for outbound, that are in pipeline and that have closed one, and trying to actually see how do we move these accounts from high levels of engagement to meeting and then from meeting to actual opportunity and then from opportunity to close one. So we want a shared dashboard. And I say that because the main dashboard that is the actual metric of success in detail for the ABM program. I think that it's helpful to have a separate marketing dashboard that is like, how are we doing at the awareness stage? But like sales doesn't care about that. What sales cares about is who can I outbound to today? And I say that lovingly, but however, wherever sales is getting involved from an account progression perspective, you want that on a shared dashboard. And the other reason you want to share a dashboard is it really just helps to drive alignment because we've had clients that marketing have their dashboard and their automation platform and sales has a different dashboard and their CRM. And because the data is passed from the marketing automation platform to the CRM and sales rejects the data that is passed over, we're looking at the same dashboard that used the same general criteria from a property perspective and should be the same dashboard. But because we have different data sets, we see different results. So I've actually had clients where marketing was winning the automation platform, but was losing in the CRM, which is a problem. So like same dashboards that's reviewed on a weekly basis by marketing and sales. And the last dashboard is an executive summary dashboard that just outlines accounts that are engaged, and that's the least important metric. Sales accepted, opportunities, pipeline generated, pipeline influenced or accelerated, and then closed won revenue or closed lost revenue. It's also helpful to see the revenue that's lost from our target accounts because that's actually a super helpful metric to then do a review and be like, oh, did we actually know what our best fit customer was? Because if you lose all of your best fit customers, probably not your best fit, or you have a really bad sales team, or you have a terrible marketing team. But that's a problem regardless, and we should figure out why.
Straightforward. All right, man. We always like to end all episodes with one question, and that is, what's the number one thing teams should do today to start measuring ABM more effectively?
Create clear objectives for all of your programs by mapping them to the stages of the account progression model, so you know how to measure the success effectively, because not every program will book a meeting.
Darn it.
We're doing ABM all wrong. I say we do more outbound.
Gotta bang those dials.
Right. Bang those dials. Mason, thank you so much for joining us again today. How can people learn more about Scrappy ABM and kind of follow your problem-based content?
I promise there is some solution-oriented content. Like, I'm not always a Debbie Downer, but I am a lot, actually. I talk a lot about all the data back problems. So if you Google Scrappy ABM, we took a Spaceballs approach. So that's just the name of everything. So like, we have the Scrappy ABM website, the podcast, LinkedIn page, which actually gets content now. Hired a marketer that like runs our social content, which is like super helpful as a side note. And then I still do my own stuff. So if you want to hear specifically for me for some reason, just go look up Mason Cosby. There is no R. If there was an R, I'd be more fit, more famous, and more rich. For those of you that don't know, it's kicker for the Green Bay Packers, former kicker. He's now retired, which sounds super nice. Anyway, Mason Cosby, I post a bunch of stuff about account-based marketing and occasionally photos of my daughter.
Awesome. Thank you again, Mason.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.